So we're going to continue in the Gospel of John, but before we go there, a couple of thoughts. First thing, let me get this stuff out of here. Do you know what this is? You know, I think, first let me just say, I taught youth for a really long time. In fact, I taught at the prison, the youth center up on 611, and you're going to hear a lot about that, I think, because it just became a part of me, those kids. That was my flock, as it were. But one thing that they always really sort of didn't understand whenever I would go there to teach, and these are kids that really don't know God. You know, I remember speaking to one of the young people there, and I said, well, you know, what do you know about God? I said, what do you know about Jesus? And they said, well, only what I saw on Simpsons, there's that one guy, you know. And I mean, honestly, there are people who only know that much about what we believe. It's really important we start with at the very beginning. And so I would point to this and I would say, well, you know what this is? It's just a bunch of paper. It's just a bunch of ink. And then I would rip a page and I'd look at them and they'd be like, sacrilege! You just tore the Bible! Because to them, the Bible's this thing that, you know, is somehow magical and mystical. And all I know about it is you don't look at it, you don't read it, because it's full of stuff that's hard to understand, you know. And genuinely, that was their understanding and belief about the Bible. You know, and so I would mark in my Bible, and it would just be terrible. And I would say, well, you know, this is just paper and ink. But the words that are in this thing right here, they're life. They're life itself. And you know what else this is? I say, this is a miracle. And people say to me, well, how do you know that God exists? I really don't need to say anything more than this. Because this itself is a miracle. How is this here? How did it get here? And how is it still here? And how has it not changed in thousands of years? You know, when archaeologists are digging around and they're finding bones and they're doing stuff, they don't say, oh, yeah, okay, this finally proves the Bible is true. No, that's not how it goes. How it goes is, hey, let's check in the Bible and see where these bones fit. They come here first because this is proven. This is God's word. This is true. This is what has the power to save lives and to give meaning and to give purpose. And so we're going to open it up and we're going to look at it someday. We'll get there. I promise. But you know, it's super important that we understand that not only is it a miracle, and not only is it the Word of God, but it is the very heart of God. And so these same kids will say to me, well, how do you know how you should live? How do you know if you should do this or you shouldn't do that? And I said, well, you're not going to find it written in here. No. But what you will find in here is the heart of God. And then you can ask him. You can say, should I or shouldn't I? And he'll tell you. And the way you know the heart of God is to know the Bible. And that's why we come. That's why we're here. That's what we do. You know, we study the Bible and people think we're crazy. Nuts. What do you guys study the Bible all the time? Yeah, well, because we want to know the heart of our good shepherd. We want to know his heart. We want to know how much he loves us. That's what we want to know. We need it. Like, we need it every day. I do. So that's what we're doing. That's what we're going to do this morning. But you know, a couple more warnings before we jump in. Another thing that happens, and these kids, I love them so much, but they hear it all the time. We get to this Christianese thing we do, right? We start using the language that's in here, and that's fine. But just remember that It was written for its day. It still speaks to us today. But there's words and there's terms, and we're going to use a lot of them. And we can get into this Christian-easy thing where we're speaking some language that nobody can really relate to. You know? And so I'm going to do it. We all do it. We talk about God as our shepherd, and I'm going to be talking about that. He is our great shepherd. He's the great shepherd of our souls, at least for those of us who love him. But, you know, today people want a shepherd. You know, what is that? We'll talk about that. But it's important, you know, that if we fall into that, to remember that people can't always relate. And we have to kind of bring it back. And that's what Jesus did. You know, he spoke in the terminology of his day. He used things, pictures, and illustrations that were suitable, that fit the time. And we need to do the same. Let's start. I'm going to start in an odd place. Let's go to Psalm 23. And you'll see, and it'll be clear, and probably already is clear to you why. But we're talking about how God is our great shepherd. And we're going to be in John 10, and we're going to be talking about the shepherd illustrations that Jesus uses. But this is where we need to start, the heart of God. And if you haven't memorized this, I knew someone who was severely addicted and would fight it over years. And I remember him telling me one time, he said, you know, I struggle. He says, I struggle all the time. Said, but I have memorized Psalm 23, and whenever I struggle, I just recite it. And that's how beautiful this particular passage is. There's something that people can relate to, footprints, right? And if you talk to anybody and you say, well, have you heard of footprints? They'll be like, oh, yeah, I know that one. And sometimes they even think it's in the Bible. Well, not word for word, but Psalm 23 is pretty much it. Because footprints, if you know it, it talks about how someone is watching their footprints over their life, and at one point in their life, or many points in their lives, there's just one pair of footprints, two steps. And they're like, Lord, why did you leave me? Remember that? Why did you leave me? Why did you abandon me? That was the worst time of my life. Where were you? I only see one pair of footprints. And we know how it goes, right? Jesus says, that's where I picked you up and I carried you. Right? Well, that's Psalm 23. Let's read this. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not lack. I shall not want. There's nothing I need. He is my shepherd. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. My cup overflows. All these things are magnificent promises and great and mighty things that God has shared from his tender heart to our heart, right? With that in mind, let's go now to John 10, where we need to be. You know, the Bible is many things. One of the things that it is, of course, is the heart of God, and it is our instruction book for life for those of us that love him and know him, right? And there's four gospels in the Bible. Four gospels. We talk about those. And John has covered this a million times, but there's three synoptic gospels. They're basically four different people telling the life of Jesus Christ from four different perspectives. And what I love about this is there are four people who love God who all talk about the same God. And you can see so clearly from them that they are. But John's a little different than the other three. And he's different in a couple of ways that are very notable. One is he uses much smaller words. The words he uses are like one syllable, two syllable. If you check it out, his words are pretty simple. He's talking to simple people. And he tends to emphasize that simplicity. But one of the things that we see here, and I'm going to read John 10, the beginning of this. First of all, remember where we are. The Pharisees have said to him, to Jesus, they've said, are we blind also? This is where he's been challenged just prior to this. And he says, if you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, we see, therefore your sin remains. So basically, the Pharisees are challenging him. And so this is his rebuttal to this. And we're going to see two parts right now. And I'm just going to cover two. And sometimes we call them parables. But in John, who's very simple, he never uses that word. The Greek word is parabole, really, is what it is, parable. But John uses the word paroimia. And I'm no expert in languages, but I did look this up. It's a different word. It means illustration. Very similar. And I'm not suggesting that he means something very much different. But in John here, he does not say the word like. He doesn't say this is like. You'll see that as we go through this. He says, this is. And that's a subtle but a notable difference. For those of us who do study the word, you know, you'll notice that. So he says this, and I'm sorry I'm in King James, but I love it. Truly, truly, I say to you, he that enters not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbs in some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he that enters in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. And when he puts forth his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And a stranger they will not follow, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of a stranger. The Bible is many things. Another thing that it is, it's very important to understand, it's an accurate history of God's creation and of God's work in this world. And that's how we know the heart of God, because we see his history. You know, we all have parents, right? And you know, we all know our parents. We knew our parents well, and why? Because we grew up and we lived with them. We saw them in hard times and in easy times. We saw them when there was money and when there wasn't money. We saw them when we were good and when we were bad. You know, we've seen them. We know their heart because we know their history. We know the heart of God because we know the history of God, right? Well, what is that history? Well, God created Adam. He wanted fellowship. He wanted to be Adam's friend, his comrade, his companion. He also wanted to be his shepherd, his leader, his guide. And we're going to see that really when you look at the Bible, it's really the history of God wanting to be the shepherd of his people. And you know what the other side of it is? It's also the history of his people rejecting him as their shepherd. Over and over and over again. You know, Cain and Abel, right? So just do what's right, God says. But Cain didn't want to do what was right. He wanted to reject what was right. And it goes on, you know, it goes on throughout history. There's Moses and Joshua and the judges, and it just keeps going, and the divided kingdom happens. And in all of these things and at all of these times, the people said, we don't want God to be our shepherd. We want to pick a shepherd of our own, someone that's mighty and fierce, a king to be over us and to lead us and to guide us, and we'll be strong. And so the rabbis, the teachers, it goes throughout all of history where ultimately the shepherds started picking themselves. They started raising themselves up. And if in Ezekiel 34, we won't go there directly, but if you read it sometime, you'll see that God rebukes the shepherds of Israel. He rebukes them in a really harsh way. He says, you are fat, and you eat all the food, and you care less for the sheep. And he says, you know, you're going to be judged for that. And meanwhile, the people are rejecting God all along. And so we get to this place in this set of verses here where Jesus is addressing this part to those shepherds that had raised themselves up. And he's rebuking them. This is a rebuke. We're going to see in the next passage that Jesus, even though it's tied directly, he then turns to his people, the followers, and he starts speaking of his love and his compassion for them. But this rebuke of the shepherds is because they had stolen what wasn't theirs, right? They had usurped, as it were, the place of shepherd instead of God. And I can tell you this, you know, we as a people, we need to realize that God is the great shepherd of our souls. He really is. I shared this last time too, but and we have a choice. We can either let him be or we can choose our own shepherd. And I can tell you that that path is not a good path. When you choose your own shepherd, that's what the Bible shows. It leads to destruction. It leads to emptiness. It leads to this complete lack. You know, in Psalm 23, it said, I shall not want. I shall not lack. But when we pick our own shepherd, when we pick, and you know, in the end, when you pick your own shepherd, what you're saying is, I want to be my own shepherd. Because you're making your own decision. Even though God has said, no, let me be your shepherd. Let me guide you. Let me sing my songs of love to you. Let me show you what a beautiful way it is to live in unity and harmony with me. But no, we say, no, I don't want that. Let me be my own shepherd. I'm going to pick my own way. You know, if you don't have the Bible, you don't have anything. You don't have anything. If you don't have the God of the Bible, not only don't you have this, you don't have anything. You are completely empty. You might not even know it. You know, one of the things that, I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a classic picture, and I was going to bring it, but I'll just describe it. In these days, the shepherds, the way they worked was, you know, they would have this little pen, and it might be, depending on the size of your flock, perhaps as big as this platform, maybe smaller, maybe bigger. But it would be a little wall, you know, like a little set of walls. And sometimes the walls were just bushes, you know, but there was something. And there'd be a little opening. And we're going to talk about the porter and how he sat at the door. And that's an old illustration, an illustration that we don't really relate to today, but that's the way it would work. They would get all the sheep into this little pen. And if you've seen sheep, they're all tight and clustered in, and then the porter or the shepherd would put themselves there at the door. And nothing could come in or go out unless they went right over the shepherd. It's a classic illustration. But you know, it's really important to understand that it was tight. You know, it wasn't a big space. Like, and there were these walls, you know, and sometimes I think what we do is we say, well, God, I'm claustrophobic. You keep putting me in this like little space, and you're my shepherd, and you put these walls around me, these things, these rules, these laws. This is one of the big complaints I would often hear. Is like, well, I would love to be a Christian, but you guys can't do anything. You know, you're not allowed. You got all these rules. And I'm like, you got that all completely wrong. We don't have laws or rules. No, no, no. We just want to be near the shepherd. And those walls, the reason those walls are there, you know why they're there? To protect me. To protect me. I want to be near the shepherd. The walls aren't there to keep me there. the walls are there to keep the enemy out, to keep the wolves out there out. The shepherd has put me in this pen, this fold, to keep me safe. I shall not lack. I shall not want. I want to be near the shepherd. And so Jesus, in this first set of verses here, he's rebuking the shepherds because that isn't their purpose. Their purpose was to make themselves something when they were really nothing. They'd really completely missed the heart of God. And they had, what they had done in that day was they had nationalized everything, right? So every verse they would interpret through national Israel. And you know, that's true to some degree. So when God talks about being a shepherd at that time, they'd say, sure, he's the shepherd of the nation of Israel. And that's true. That is true. But what that does let us do and what it let them do is depersonalize. And that was their great crime. That it became impersonal. And that's the history we see from Cain through Moses, through Joshua, through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, through King David, who was a shepherd after God's own heart. He was one rare individual in the lineage and the history of God who loved God and understood that God was the shepherd, and he is the one that wrote Psalm 23. He's the one that understood, right? But all these rabbis at this time, they had depersonalized. It was a God, but he was somewhere out there. He wasn't somewhere in here. You know, it's very, very different. And so that's what I believe truly angered God and angers Jesus here. And we don't see him being angry per se, but he is giving him and them, these rabbis, who said, are we blind also? What kind of hubris is that? You know, are we, what are you saying? We're blind? Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what Jesus is saying, is you're completely blind. And you know what? Without this, you're empty and you're blind. Without this, and without the God of the Bible, you're empty, you're blind, you're poor, you're naked, and you don't even know it. You think you are all that. You think you have, and believe me, I say this because I know I did that. I mean, we all did, but I really did. I really did. I went through times of where I was just so much smarter than God, and I knew so much more, and God was great for you guys. You know, you guys need that crutch, man. But not me, you know. I've got it all figured out. I understand science. I understand things like that, you know. But I'll tell you what, if the only voice you have is science, then you've got no voice at all, right? Because science is a process. It doesn't tell you anything. Evolution doesn't tell you anything. Evolution really wants you to die pretty much as fast as you can, because we got to get on to the next better thing. That's what evolution tells you, right? Evolution doesn't give you a purpose. Evolution doesn't give you a reason for why you live. No. You're just temporary. That's what evolution tells you. That's what science tells you. Science tells you nonsense. And it doesn't give you any reason or purpose or meaning in life. But the Bible does, and Jesus does, and God does, right? And so, we have this pen. And you know, when I didn't know Jesus, I had the same feeling. It's like, oh, but, you know, I want so much more, so much more. We'll talk about that in a minute, because I'm going to cover the rest of these verses, but let me just say this. Abundance isn't about more. He's going to say in a second here, I give them life, and I give it more abundantly. Well, you know what? Abundance isn't about the things that you have. It's not about the bulk. And that's what you do when you're empty. You fill your life with all the stuff. Your house is packed. Mine is too, unfortunately. But you know, you have all these kinds of stuff that you fill. It's what we do. So let's go ahead. Then on verse 6 he says, this parable spoke Jesus unto them, and they did not understand the things which he spoke to them. This is the rabbis that did not understand. This is the teachers, right? Because they don't know God. You know, if you want to understand the heart, as I mentioned, you know, growing up in a family, you know the heart of your mother. You know the heart of your father. You know their heart. You can understand their voice when they speak to you. Like, you know what they're saying. Even if whatever words, you know what they mean, right? But the rabbis did not understand. Verily, verily, or truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door, and by me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes not, but to steal and to kill and to destroy. I am come that they might have life, what we just spoke about, and that they might have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. But he that is a hired man and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, sees the wolf and leaves the sheep and flees, and the sheep are scattered. The hired man flees because he is a hired man and he doesn't care for the sheep. But I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and I am known by my sheep. And as the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have that are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and they shall be one fold and one shepherd. And therefore does my Father love me, because I lay down my life that I might take it again. No man takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. And this commandment have I received of my Father. Life. Life more abundantly. You know, what kind of life is it if you're just sitting in a sheepfold and all you got is your buds? You know, you're kind of like milling about in your little sheepfold and, oh, morning's here, okay. Shepherd says, hey, let's go. We all go out and we eat our grass and do our thing. And you know, this is where that Christianese thing comes in. Sometimes we use these illustrations that we don't all relate to, but I think we can understand this, right? That God has that heart of taking care of us. And so we go out and Jesus says, well, I have this abundant life for you. Well, how abundant is that, really, when you think about it? I eat grass, I go home to my little fold, and I sleep, I go out and I eat some more grass, and then I go back. What kind of an illustration is that? It's not too enticing, really, when you think about it. It's like, maybe, Jesus, you should go back and think about that one. Maybe we can come up with one that's a little more exciting, you know? An illustration that I can really relate to, you know. Maybe it's one where, hey, we go out and we have this car dealership and we go buy some cool cars and we bring them back to our fold, you know, not much room to park them, you know, but could get one in there maybe, you know, and we'll be a little crowded over here, you know, with the car in there and stuff, but we could turn the stereo on, could dance, we'll have sheep dance parties and, you know, stuff like that. Of course, somebody else is going to want their own car too. So maybe we could squeeze another car over here. You know, we'll kind of be in the middle. Yeah, now we're talking. Yeah, that's abundant life, right? You know, but what you'll find is the more you squeeze stuff in, right, the less you really have. the less you really have. And you know, at some point the shepherd says, hey, I got this really cool stream, man. This stream is sweet water. And the field is green. And the grass is super sweet, man. We're heading out. We're going to go do that. A couple of sheep are like, meh. Or maybe it's, bah. You know what I mean? They're like, we got the car here. We got the stereo. Well, you know, we're going to hang here for a while. And I think I've done that. Even in my walk with the Lord, I've done that. I've got something that's really nice, really good, and I start spending a lot of time with it. Less time with the shepherd. The shepherd says, okay. Oh, we're going to go. But you guys can hang here if you want. What are we missing out on? Like, when we do that? It's crazy. We're crazy. What you learn is that people just keep bringing the cars in. They keep bringing the stuff in, and the next thing you know, we're standing on the cars, and we got no room, and we're miserable. And the shepherd and the sheep that love the shepherd, they're over there eating grass, having a great time, drinking sweet water, having an abundant life. And our lives have become nothing, empty, filled with stuff. And that stuff is providing no purpose or meaning. It's providing nothing to us. The next thing we know, we are empty again on the inside. Why? Because we haven't been with the shepherd. We've been by ourselves. We've been doing our own thing. You know? After a while, you start bringing home friends to the sheepfold with you, right? And the shepherd says, well, your friend there, his ears are kind of pointy. His nose is a little longer than the rest of the sheep. Oh, I know, but this dude is super cool. He comes from that sheepfold over there. Let me tell you, that they know how to party over there. And this dude, he is fun. Or maybe the sheep comes home and says, Mom, Dad, I met this sheep, man. Just let me bring him in. Yeah, I know. He's a little bigger than the rest of the sheep, and his teeth are a little sharper. That's just the way they grow over there. And so we bring them into the sheepfold. And you know, we should be inviting people into the sheepfold. Yeah, we should be. But not against what God says. Not against what the shepherd says, right? Because the shepherd is there for a reason. He's there to give us safety and to protect us. And if you want abundant life, you know where that has to start? With safety. It has to start there. It has to start knowing that I'm protected by the Almighty God of the universe. Nothing can touch me. Nothing. Not COVID. No. Nothing can touch me unless God allows it. And if he does allow it, there's a reason. There's a reason. An important reason. And we learn things. And we need to learn things. Especially me. I'm a hard head, let me tell you. And so, you know, these sheep, they think they have the abundant life, but they don't. The ones that have the abundant life are the ones crowded around the shepherd over in that other pasture. And so it's very super important as we understand, particularly verse 10, that if we want to have this abundant, fantastic life that Jesus offers us, wow, time flies, that we need to be near the shepherd always, the great shepherd. And he needs to be the shepherd of our souls. And we can't make our own selves the shepherd of our own souls. Because we don't know what we're doing. We're the ones that will bring the car. We're the ones that will do the wrong things, right? He's the one that guides us. He's the one that protects us. I'm going to wrap it up shortly here. Let's go to verse 19. It says, simply in verse 19, there was a division, therefore, among the Jews for these sayings. 1 second. Division. There was a division. And you know why? Because some people want to hear from God and some people don't. And the people that do understand all these things that I've said this morning. And the people that don't can't understand a single word. It's all a mystery. It's all weird. And the reason is because they're still the shepherd of their own souls. And they want that. And they want to be. And when that's true, you can't hear from the great shepherd. You can't. You can't hear him. But if you're willing, all you have to do is ask him, right? So division comes. Jesus brought division. He continues to bring division today. And we will see, and we do even now, even today, greater and greater and greater division between those who love God and are willing to follow him and those who don't. Who think they have it all figured out. Think that science is the answer. Think that evolution is the answer. Turn with me one more time to Revelation 7:17. Should have put a little sticky. Where are we here? Here we go. Revelation 7:17. For the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne shall feed them and shall lead them unto living fountains of waters. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. You know, this is the history of God as our shepherd. And we rejected God so many times that finally he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send my son. I'm not going to send him as a lord, as someone to lord it over everyone. I'm going to send him as a lamb. Why? Well, because we are lambs. So that they will hear him. So that we will hear him. And the lamb came. And you know what happened? The lamb came into the fold. And we grew little pointy ears. And we grew a long nose. And we became wolves. And we ate him. If you will. We killed the lamb that God sent. We killed him. I killed him. You killed him. You might say, well, how did we kill him? Well, because there's this thing called sin in us. And that's what we did. But he died so that we wouldn't have to pay for that sin. He died. He knew he would die. He came. He sacrificed. And in Revelation here, it says that he will also then become our shepherd. So the Lamb was both among us, one of us, and also the one who leads and guides us. He is our shepherd. He's the shepherd lamb, if you will. He's like us. What a miracle we'll never understand. We will never understand that. But he will wipe away, it says, God will wipe away every tear. That's abundant life. Abundant life isn't about stuff. Abundant life is that when you cry, that the God of the universe leans down and wipes the tear from your eye. That's abundant life. Abundant life is knowing the one that made you. And if there's anyone here that doesn't, you're empty. You have nothing. You have only your own voice to listen to. It doesn't have to be that way. Let's pray.